Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We know that language is not etched in stone, but rather a living thing that evolves over time. Still, if there were no rules, it would be chaos out there. Technology is changing the way we communicate, and some believe that in the age of autocorrect, teaching and learning the rules of grammar isn't necessary. Still, others believe correct grammar is a worthwhile pursuit and that certain rules are worth using and maybe even enforcing. That's why we continue to have Grammar Girl on the show. Joining us now to find a middle ground is blogger, podcaster, and more recently, app developer, Mignon Fogarty, a.k.a. The Grammar Girl. Welcome back to the show, Mignon.
Good morning, Ann.
So, you know, I'm super impressed that you made the app yourself, and it kind of made me think, should we have had you on Tech Tuesday? But you had to get in the app business, right? This was the next step.
Right. It seemed like such an obvious thing. And GrammarPop, it was a game I wanted to play myself that didn't exist. You match words with their parts of speech. You know, it's a really basic concept if you think about grammar. But all the games that were out there were really babyish, you know, obviously for small children. Mm-hmm. And I wanted something that I could play and that would be fun. So, you know, I've heard since it launched that a lot of parents are playing it with their kids. But the parents can play it, too, and have a lot of fun. It's just for the iPad right now. It's called Grammar Pop. But, yeah, I made it myself.
Why did you do that? Why didn't you just hire somebody?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people, small business people in particular, find themselves in this situation. You have a great idea for an app, and you talk to some developers, and you sort of gasp when you hear the quotes of what it's going to cost to make that app. So I realized it wasn't going to happen unless I did it myself. And I found this amazing tool called Game Salad, which is like a, if you've, you know, used WordPress to publish a blog, it's sort of the same thing. You know, instead of having to know the HTML to make your text bold or italics, you just hit the B button or the I button. Well, Game Salad lets you make apps kind of that way. You don't need to know a programming language. You just sort of need to know what you want to do, and then you drag and drop commands. So once I found Game Salad, I knew I'd be able to make my game Grammar Pop for the iPad. And because of the way Game Salad works, I can also port the game to other platforms like Android and the Mac desktop. So now that Grammar Pop is out for the iPad and doing really well, I'm already working on the Android and Mac desktop versions to, you know, get it out to more people.
My guest is Mignon Fogarty, blogger, podcaster, and app developer. If you have a question or comment for Grammar Girl, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're going to get into grammar questions, so we welcome yours. Don't forget, you can also post your question or comment on Facebook as well. So your app is a game. It's not just an app that makes, you know, where you, by which you can download your podcasts and that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. No, and my first priority was making it fun. You know, I wanted it to be a game that I would want to play. So you get a sentence and you look at the words and you say, okay, that's a noun, and you hit the noun button and then you hit the word, and the cloud explodes and makes a happy sound and you get points. I mean, it's primarily a game. But in beta testing, we found that teachers were super excited about it because they could use it to have their kids practice what they were learning in school. And, like, homeschoolers really love it because if you don't already know parts of speech, it can teach you that. But, you know, if you're a grown-up and you know those things, then it's just a fun game.
Does it work with punctuation, too?
No, it's just words and parts of speech.
Okay.
And in a way, it's funny because, you know, I'm called Grammar Girl, but the vast majority of what I do isn't grammar. It's usage and punctuation.
Right.
So in some ways, this game is the first full grammar thing that I've done because parts of speech actually are considered grammar.
all right. So I'm sorry. I, of course, tried to download it in my smartphone and didn't know. I'll have to go home and mooch an iPad from somebody back at home and play the game. Because I was one of those weirdos that like diagramming sentences in junior high and so forth. So I think I'd probably like it, huh?
Yeah. If you like diagramming sentences, I think you'd love this game. It's kind of the same idea.
It's done very well.
Yeah, I mean, I hoped that people would like it, but it, you know, it reached number 4 in education at the iTunes App Store over the weekend. I mean, it launched Thursday, and it's just been doing super well. So I'm really excited, you know, and the feedback, you know, hearing that parents are playing it with their kids and having fun and feeling like they're learning something too. It's been incredibly heartwarming.
Well, congratulations on your success.
Thanks.
Jeff in Columbus, you're on the air with Mignon Fogarty. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. Multiple caller, by the way, just to let you know. Love your show.
Oh, thank you.
The reason I was calling is I have a comment is slash question. I would actually like to know where the term bathing suit came from, because I've been called a grammar Nazi before. I correct friends and family's grammar to the point where they've actually yelled at me. My sister-in-law, hey, it's not something I'm too horribly proud of, but it's just a thing. But my sister-in-law, you know, she used to use the term bathing suit. And that's just one thing that really, really irks me. And I just looked right at her, and I'm like, so you're going to go get your bathing suit to go swimming? She's like, yeah. I was like, so you're going to go swim naked? She's like, what? I'm like, well, what do you wear when you bathe in the shower? She's like, well, nothing. I'm like, exactly.
Oh, interesting.
So she has made it a point to consciously make sure she says swimsuit from now on.
Oh, see, I would say bathing suit just to torture you. But well, Mignon, I mean, that sounds like a colloquialism maybe, or what?
Yeah, you know, I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm sort of looking it up while your caller was talking, and the term bathing suit originated in the late 1800s, you know, and that was when people wore almost full clothes to go swimming. The women were, you know, head to toe covered still. But I can't find anything that says why it's a bathing suit instead of a swimming suit. I would imagine that they just called it, you know, like sunbathing is a term, you know, sort of bathing in the sun, and yet you're still wearing your swimsuit or your bathing suit. So I think it's just probably something that originated because we used the word differently in the late 1800s.
Jeff, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
If you have a question or comment for Grammar Girl, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Any big conflicts emerging these days? Do things trend with you? You've been doing this for a number of years now. Do you see trends in what people care about?
I do. And in fact, a week or two ago, there was an enormous kerfuffle on the internet about the word literally. You know, someone had Googled define literally, and a dictionary definition popped up that had, you know, in the literal sense, but then the second definition was, you know, used for emphasis to mean figuratively. And that person took a screenshot and posted it to Reddit and said something like, congratulations, we've finally broken the English language, because, you know, it literally doesn't mean literally anymore. And, you know, that post got thousands of likes, and it just got spread all over the internet, and people were flipping out.
Uh-huh.
Well, that definition of literally has been in the dictionary for 100 or 200 years. Like, it's not new. It shows sort of a misunderstanding of what dictionaries do. So a lot of people think that when a word makes it into the dictionary, it's achieved some sort of validation, some stamp of approval. But that's not really what dictionaries do. Dictionaries reflect how people use the language, so that when you hear someone use literally that way, you can look it up in the dictionary and see what they mean. And then, you know, and often I think most dictionaries do have a little note that says, you know, this usage is non-standard or controversial, or, you know, some tag that lets you know, like, it's people don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in there, but it's also marked as bad in some way. But, you know, it's been in there for hundreds of years. So, like, we haven't just broken the English language, and English is just fine, and it's nothing new. And yet there are these trends where something gets a lot of attention, and then everyone sort of runs around with their arms in the air screaming for a while.
Gerald in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Gerald.
Hello. I have a question on the use of and. I always thought of and as a conjunction. If somebody says, I will wait and see, it means you will first wait and then you will see. But if someone says, I will try and see a movie, to me that means you will first you will try and second is you will see the movie. But I don't think that's what they mean. How did
right
and come to be used not as a conjunction?
Right. You know, that really bugs me, too. It's one of the things that when I hear it, I kind of cringe. But the research I've done on it sort of shows that it's become idiomatic, which means, you know, it's like when we say it's raining cats and dogs. We don't mean cats and dogs are falling from the sky. Well, there are more subtle idioms, like I will try and go to a movie. I always say I will try to, and I would prefer everyone else did, but from what I've gathered that this has happened enough that it's now sort of considered an idiom.
I think I'm probably guilty of that idiom. I always like to confess these things openly. I may do that.
Yeah, and it annoys some people, so you should know. And that, you know, that's what I the kind of advice I try to give. Like I always try and, you know, give you the consensus of the experts, right? The Merriam-Webster, you know, usage guide and the Garner's Modern American Usage, all those, the Chicago Manual of Style, all those books, you know, will say, you know, like a really common example, all those books will say that splitting infinitives isn't considered wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the experts say. But there are just lots and lots of people in the world who still think it's wrong. And so if you want to be careful and you don't want to be, your writing to be criticized, you should still follow the most conservative rules, even if the language experts are saying it's fine to do it. You know, it's just, is it really worth getting in trouble over? You know, you have to consider your audience and whether you're writing something formal or informal. And, you know, for a school essay, maybe your teacher thinks it's wrong to split infinitives, so you shouldn't do it. You know, it's language, English has a lot more gray areas than people realize.
And it's really interesting how people take ownership of it.
Right. Well, I think, you know, you're taught rules. And sometimes, you know, I've met people who, you know, went to Catholic school in the 50s and had their knuckles wrapped with a ruler if they did things wrong. And, you know, when you're taught that something is a rule, it's really hard to let go of that later when someone says, oh, no, it's fine. You know, like people, we're just not wired to let go of our rules that way, I think.
Okay, Gerald, thanks a lot for that call. My guest is Mignon Fogarty, blogger, podcaster, and now app developer. If you have a question or comment for Grammar Girl, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher, my guest, Grammar Girl, Mignon Fogarty. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Mignon has a new app out. It is, what's the name of it again? It's called
Grammar Pop.
That's right, Grammar Pop.
Pop Clouds.
Right.
Yeah.
And I want to play it, so I will do that tonight when I snatch an iPad, because that's what is, but you are preparing it for other devices as well.
Right. People have been clamoring for the Android version, so I'm already hard at work trying to make that happen.
All right. Let's see. Let's go to Jim in Dublin. You're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Hey, thank you. Uh-huh. Please take my call.
You bet. What's up?
Well, I guess the question is just something that irritates me. When somebody always says, and I don't know why they do, but they always say, I gotta take a bath, you know, or I gotta go take a poop. What are you gonna take it on a date? I mean, that's always irritating. Why do people do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, thanks,
thank
Jim.
That's really funny.
I gotta take a walk.
Yeah, it's another one of those idioms. So, and it's funny because bring and take are words that people struggle with in sort of their literal meaning. So a lot of people ask me about the difference between bring and take. So, you know, you ask someone to bring something to you and you take something away from where you are. So, you know, you're going to, if you're at home, you're going to take a cake to the school. You know, so it, you're always, it's like where you're going or where you're from determines whether you use bring or take. But then complicating it, and this is especially difficult for people who are learning English, we do. We have all these idioms, like we were talking about before, words that aren't used for their literal meaning. We have all these idioms that use bring and take, like take a bath or take a walk. And so it especially confuses people who are learning English, because not only do they have to learn the difference between bring and take, but then they have all these other meanings too that just seem to have nothing to do with what the word actually means. So phrases like that, like take a walk, they're just considered idioms, and they actually aren't wrong. They, you know, you wouldn't get marked down on a paper for saying, you know, we're going to take a walk later or something like that.
All righty. Molly in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Molly.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have a question. I hear people use the word went instead of gone, and I hear it incorrectly all the time, and I didn't know if it was just something that's becoming more of a fad now and why people are doing that incorrectly.
I haven't heard that myself, but it's possible that it's part of a dialect. Like, I think, excuse me, I think what you're thinking of probably is an incorrect use. You know, if you're saying, I have went to the store instead of they have gone to the store. Yeah, so that's not an idiom. That would be considered, you know, just using the wrong verb. And sometimes things like that will emerge in different communities, you know, as sort of a regional dialect, and it'll spread. So it may be that that's happening in your area. I haven't heard it where I live, but it could be, you know, spreading in your area.
I hope it goes away.
It's like the plague.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. Take care, Molly. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Nancy in Columbus, you want to ask the eternal grammar question.
I have a split infinitive story. My grandmother had a little saying that she liked. It was, to live in the hearts of those we love is to never die. So we carved it on her tombstone. And my Aunt Christine, who was highly educated, came over to Walnut Grove. And when she saw it, she said, oh, my goodness, you split the infinitive, and it's carved in granite.
That is horrible.
The other thing I want to mention, and I hate to say this because I'm doing it, Terry Gross does it, I'm afraid you do it too. When I think about speaking, after a two-term president, a recent two-term president, I don't have to name him, it is so refreshing to hear President Obama or someone like Richard Cordray, and they speak so eloquently and mindfully. And watching the special about James Baldwin, my goodness, he spoke so well and so eloquent. But now in common usage, I hate to say it, you and others and Terry Gross and now even me, because I thought I was critical and I wouldn't do it, we're starting all of our sentences with so. It doesn't make any sense. And you hear it over and over and over again.
It's true. Actually, we were asking about trends earlier, and starting sentences with so does seem to be a trend. I've even seen articles about it in The Atlantic and things like that, trying to ponder why people do it. I think in some ways it's a verbal tic, in the same way that or you know is. It's sort of a way to stall for time when you're trying to think. I find myself doing it sometimes too when I'm, you know, talking like this off the cuff and I'm trying to think while I'm trying to speak at the same time. Is sort of a way of continuing the thought from your previous sentence. You know, I just did it, actually.
Well, yeah.
But going back to the split infinitive, first of all, that is horrible to criticize your choice in a headstone. I mean, nothing good will ever come of that. So I think that's horrible. But thinking of the sentence itself, to never die, if I remember right, is or to, how did it end, to never?
Hang on one second.
Is she still there?
Yeah, she is. Nancy, can you repeat what the tombstone?
To live in the hearts of those we love is to never die. It should be. Is never to die.
Right. But
it sounds stilted.
It does sound stilted.
Yeah.
That is an example where I would split the infinitive because it flows more poetically, and that's what you're going for on a headstone, I think. So that's a perfect example of an instance where there's no need to avoid splitting the infinitive.
All right, Nancy, hang in there. Oops. Okay, I just said I'm going to try not to say so, like, I'll do my best. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comments there. My guest is Mignon Fogarty, blogger, podcaster, and more recently app developer. You can check out a link to her app at wosu.org/allsides. It's a game. It's called Grammar Pop. Let's see, Douglas in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I just had a real quick thing, and I noticed that somebody mentioned the word trend. And I sometimes when I'm listening to a news program, they'll say, here's what's trending. And is that, I just want to know, is that correct? Because it seems to me that it would be, here's what's happening. And I'll give you an example. Recently, I saw where a young lady and her boyfriend had a baby, and they said, here's what's trending. So does that mean that everybody's having a baby or just them?
No, isn't that like a reference to Twitter or Facebook or something, Mignon?
Oh, I'm sure it has increased in use because of that, because Twitter has its trending topics in the left sidebar.
It's what people are talking about the most.
Right. So it's words or topics or hashtags that are the most popular on Twitter right now, and they're called trending topics. So here's what's trending. But trend is a verb trend being used that way doesn't seem to be new. It actually seems to be a quite old word. But I do think that because of Twitter, probably it's being used a lot more.
Okay. Douglas, thanks for your call. Yvonne in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Yvonne.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to call about the bathing suit. I would disagree with Greg that bathing suit is perfectly acceptable. And the reason is that because when people were first doing this as a deliberate activity, they would go out into the ocean in horse-drawn vehicles, and or especially women. And these were called bathing machines, and you'd get into the bathing machine and then get into the water inside the bathing machine and do your sea bathing in there wearing your bathing suit. So that's really where it came from, is because it's it does go back to the beginning of the 18th or the end of the 18th, beginning of the 19th century.
Oh, that's fascinating. I didn't know the history. Thanks for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks, Yvonne. Take care. Ellen in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ellen.
Hi, this is Ellen. I just wanted to tell you really quick, I have a tremendous pet peeve, sort of along the same lines as the nuclear battle, why is it so difficult to say the word jewelry instead of jewelry? Because even jewelers mispronounce it.
Yes, I don't know. Sometimes, different pronunciations. If you hear someone pronounce something wrong a lot, you can start pronouncing it wrong yourself. I don't know why people have trouble with jewelry. There are a number of words that people have trouble with. The one my father actually has a horrible time pronouncing lots of words. He's dyslexic, and I don't know if that's the reason, but he mispronounces, like every time I see him, he mispronounces something. And a common one is he'll say prostate instead of prostrate. So, you know, I went in for a prostate exam. You'll get it wrong, and it just
totally
cracks me up.
I have an example of one. People say, instead of realtor, they say realtor.
Oh, yes.
Have you heard that?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. So it's there are some very funny names. There was a Reverend Spooner who misspoke so often that they named a type of misspeaking after him called a Spoonerism. So he would say something like, it's customary to cuss the bride, instead of it's customary to kiss the bride. And he did it so often, they named that kind of error after him.
It sounds like a great movie from Britain or something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Ellen.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We have an email from Brad. He writes, I was wondering if Grammar Girl could clarify for the audience the use of the words that, which, and who when used in a similar context, as in this example. Berry was one of the players who hit over 60 home runs. People seem to misuse that and which in that context, and are that and which interchangeable in that type of sentence?
Well, okay, so this is another one that bugs me, but actually isn't wrong. So to say Gary is the pitcher that did something is actually, if you look at the, you know, the reference books and stuff, it's actually not wrong, and people have been doing it for hundreds of years. But I prefer to say Gary is the person, the pitcher who did something other. You know, I think that he's a person, and so who, you know, is the best pronoun to refer to him, but it's actually not wrong to use that, which seems very odd to me in that circumstance. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone say which, mm-hmm. unless, you know, maybe they were trying to sound ultra stuffy and like maybe they were trying to sound British or something, mm-hmm. but usually it's who or that people will confuse, and I recommend that people use who. But, you know, again, for the reason it will bother people like the caller and me if you don't. But it's if you look it up in the books, it's not considered wrong to use that.
Okay. John in Columbus, you're on the air with Mignon Fogarty. Welcome.
Yes. I just, in the context, I've heard news anchors on TV, and they will say that a suspect is holed up in a place. I don't know if that's grammatically correct, but to me, it just sounds wrong. It sounds like they're held up.
Hmm.
I don't know. Any comments on that?
Grammar Girl?
My guess is that it's an idiom. Yep. Yeah, so I've just pulled it up here in a dictionary, and it's a verb phrase. So it's the same as saying, I'm going to throw up. You know, that means to vomit, but it doesn't mean to throw something up in the air. So hole up is considered a verb phrase in the same way. You know, it doesn't mean to dig a hole and then go up or something. It's like an idiom, just like we were talking about idioms before. A hole up is an idiom that means sort of to hide or, you know, yeah, pretty much just to hide.
Okay. Thank you, John, for that call. Katie in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, I have always heard from my grandmother, cakes are done and people are finished. And I was wondering if that's something you other people say.
Well, we've lost you, Katie, but I think we get the gist of your question.
Yeah, so I actually covered this in my book, 101 Troublesome Words,
mm-hmm.
because it's the kind of thing lots of people say I'm done. And then lots of grandmothers say, no, a turkey's done. You're finished. But it actually it has a fascinating origin because it comes from Irish English to say I'm done. And so the feeling against it has its roots in discrimination against immigrants who came from Ireland and, if I remember right, maybe Scotland. There's no reason you shouldn't say I'm done. It goes back,
huh.
you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, but the negative feelings against it are rooted in, you know, anti-immigrant negativity way back when people from Ireland were immigrating to the United States.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and like most people who say it today, you know, most people who don't like it today probably don't even know that it has that history. They were just taught by their parents or their grandparents not to say it that way. And so, you know, they don't even know the origin. So, you know, I'm not accusing anyone of being, you know, discriminatory today, but it just, that's sort of, that's where it comes from.
Right. Gloria in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Gloria.
Hi. Great show, as usual, Anne.
Thank you.
And I always look forward to hearing Grammar Girl on your show.
Thanks.
I wonder why many elite speakers, including President Obama, say the reason is because instead of the reason is.
Yes, it's considered redundant to say the reason is because. And I don't know why people do it. I can tell you that when I started my podcast, I did it. And a lot of people wrote in and told me how wrong I was. And I looked it up and I saw that, yes, they're right. And it is considered redundant. I think, you know, certain people probably grow up hearing it that way and just say it that way without really thinking about, you know, the reason means the same thing as because. So, yeah, it's a common error, I guess, if you want to call it that.
It denotes some emphasis to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It suggests emphasis. The reason is, I'm not saying it's right. I get the redundancy, but sometimes things are redundant for emphasis.
They are. And one that no one ever complains about, but that is very redundant, is the word myself. So if you say I baked the cake, and then you say I baked the cake myself, that means the same thing. But I have never heard anyone complain about myself being redundant. And we use it for emphasis in much the same way as the reason is because, or saying the exact same thing is for emphasis. But it fascinates me that no one has ever complained about myself.
Or you. Gloria, thanks a lot for your call.
Okay, thank
Take
you.
Care. I've noticed more people doing something that's that irritates me when they say use myself incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of an example.
So they say send the memo to Bob and myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
it
sounds more officious. I know I get the sound of it, but give us your trick about how not to do that.
Right. So the trick is to imagine how you'd say the sentence without Bob in it. So although I have heard this mistake too, most people wouldn't say send the memo to myself. Most people would, they're by ear, they would know that they should say send the memo to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you add someone else to the sentence, it doesn't change anything. So it would be send the memo to Bob and me. So I tell people to think about how they'd write or say that sentence without the other people in it. And then usually they get it right. It's the same with, you know, a lot of kids will say, you know, Susie and me are going to the movies. Well, if you tell them, you'd never say me is going to the movies. So take out Susie, and then it's pretty clear that it should be I'm going to the movies.
That's Grammar Girl Mignon Fogarty, and she will continue the conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We all like to talk about grammar, it seems like. Our guest this hour, Mignon Fogarty, she's a blogger, podcaster, and more recently app developer, and I have forgotten to add, and I apologize, author of several books on grammar and word usage. Mignon, thanks again for joining us today.
Sure, thanks for having me.
We have a Facebook message from Dustin. He said, I got into a debate yesterday about the difference between assuming and presuming. Care to settle a bet?
Yes. So I covered this in one of my books, too. I forget which one now. But they do have different meanings. So when you presume something, you have some sort of reason for holding that belief. And when you assume something, you have no basis for that belief. So, you know, The way I think of it is, you always have the famous phrase, Dr. Livingston, I presume. Well, I forget the names of the people behind the story, but the person who was who said that had actually been looking for Dr. Livingston in the forest, you know, in the jungles. So when he came across the explorer who looked like the person he was looking for, he presumed it was Dr. Livingston because he was hoping and expecting to find him. You know, if that person had no reason to believe it was Dr. Livingston, then maybe he was going to assume it was Dr. Livingston. So if you have a basis for your belief, you're presuming.
Okay. Hopefully that got to the debate for Dustin. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a question or comment for my guest, Mignon Fogarty. And Tara and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome, Tara.
Hi. I had a high school English teacher tell me one time that everybody misuses the word proceeding, and they said nobody perceives to do anything. You're either doing it or you're not doing it. Is this true?
Boy, off the top of my head, I don't know. That's a question that no one has ever asked before.
Wow. So
I have always wanted to know the answer to that.
Well,
because
Tara, are you saying the word proceeding?
Like proceeding, like I'm proceeding to go to the store.
Proceeding to go.
Well, you know, I can see why an English teacher would object to it, because, you know, if you're using it in that way, it's almost always unnecessary. You know, you could just say, I will go to the store. I am going to the store to say, and then I will proceed to go to the store is awkward and unnecessarily wordy. So that may be why the teacher was saying, you know, don't do this. It's wrong. You're using it wrong. A lot of times it's easier for teachers just to tell you something is wrong than to, you know, explain the nuances. And, you know, I am sympathetic. You know, you don't want to tell a bunch of sixth graders, well, Chicago does it this way, and but AP
right,
says
right.
Otherwise. And
okay. So, well, thank you so much.
All right.
Sure.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Take care, Tara. 614-292-8513, and Kevin in Canton, you're on the air. Welcome, Kevin.
Good morning, Ann Fisher. Good morning, Mignon Fogarty.
Good morning.
I've got to wonder what the origins are of, well, what it is, or they or do, or everyone, give everyone one.
I can't tell you what the origin is. I know that people do it. It's, you know, people write to me and complain about the is and the.
Can you give me another example, Mignon?
Yes. So someone will say, what the problem is that we are selling too much candy.
Okay.
You know, so there's that double is. What the problem is, what he is a jerk, you know, it's that double is. And again, I think people do it. It's either, you know, you can imagine it's for emphasis. What he is a jerk. That sort of adds emphasis. It mm-hmm. gives you a place to pause, make a dramatic pause. There are instances where it's not grammatically incorrect because had isn't always wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say, I'm looking for an example here.
She had malaria in the past.
Right, yeah. I had too many chocolates. That's actually grammatically correct. It's just combining, you know, two different kinds of verbs, like a helping verb with the past perfect of, you know, something else. So I know, like, oh, let's not use those words, and everyone is changing the dial on their radio. But, you know, there are instances where had is correct, and rare instances where is correct. But typically, in the average sentence, is wrong. And I don't know why people do it, but I suspect it's for emphasis.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot for that call. Dale in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Dale.
Hi, Sam. Starting a sentence when you haven't said a sentence in the first place, which I hear people do on the radio all the time, they'll start a sentence with, and again, And it drives me crazy because it's like you haven't said it in the first place. You can't say it again. You know what I mean?
Well, maybe you just tuned in and they had said it before.
Well, that's what I wonder. It makes people sound like they're telling the person doing the interviewing, you know, that they're silly and not really paying attention. It sounds very like a blowhard kind of a thing when the person answers the interview with interviewer the sentence starting with "and again." You know what I mean? It's kind of
lecturing.
Oh,
yeah.
You know what
I do understand what you're saying now. Yeah, it has felt that way before.
Yeah, I'm condescending.
I hear it all the time.
Are you there?
It drives you. Is it right, or is it just? Am I wrong to get so bugged by it? I guess is my question.
Well, if they had already made their point, and the interviewer was, you know, being dogging them or being belligerent about it, you know, you can see how someone might get irritated and say, "And again, you know, this thing I just told you, I'm going to say again." But so it wouldn't be necessarily wrong, but it's condescending and sort of rude. And if the point hasn't been made before, it's just strange.
Yeah. Dale, thanks for the call. As an interviewer, I mean, it does happen to me, and I don't really take offense. I think often what it is they're, by answering the next question, it's going to be very similar or almost the same answer to something else that they had talked about earlier. So they're just asserting that, well, I talked about this earlier, you know, and so it doesn't sound like they're being redundant. I don't know.
Yeah.
I always think of them on the side of the angels. All my interviews are great. Ed in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Thank you. First, I wonder how many people self-correct when they're talking to a grammarian. Secondly, when you had Bill Walsh on a few weeks ago, his new book, Yes, I Could Care Less, gives several good mentions to Mignon. Third, is it proper to say a couple weeks or a couple of weeks? And fourth, Winston Churchill is supposed to have given the most famous non-split infinitive when someone was trying to correct him. He said, "Madam, that is something up with which I will not put." And I'll listen to your comments on air.
Okay, let me take them in reverse order. So I have heard that is something up with which I will not put, that Winston Churchill didn't actually say it, that it's not a real quote from him. But it's fabulous and fun to repeat, so, you know, it's out there. Bill Walsh is fabulous. He wrote a guest article for the Grammar Girl website, so on retronyms, things like saying an acoustic guitar or white milk. So, yeah, Bill Walsh is fantastic. A couple of the idiom is to say there were a couple of chickens in the road. So instead of there were a couple chickens in the road. So the proper way to say that is a couple of, and I don't remember the first question.
And he's gone now, but. Whether people self-correct when they're talking to a grammarian.
Oh.
And I have to say that I'm so relaxed around you now, I'm sure that I make you cringe every 5 minutes. I don't self-correct.
No, it's funny when people send me email messages, probably half of them end with some sort of comment about, "I'm really nervous writing to you, please forgive any errors." So they do it in email a lot. What was especially funny is when I first started being Grammar Girl 7 years ago, my family noticed that I started self-correcting all the time. So I could barely get through a sentence without going back and fixing something I said. And they'd look at me and say, "Turn it off. Just talk."
John in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hello, hello. First, just a quick take on something you were talking about when I first called. I think what's leading people to overuse myself is that it's thought to be more self-effacing and modest because we're taught it's not about me, 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 and me generation and all that stuff. And I think people are kind of overcorrecting that way. There was an earlier show where there was an unresolved question about the use "as it were," And it occurred to me at the time that that's sort of a shorthand for phrases like "as some would have it" or "as you might say," as it were. And I thought it was the conditional verbs "would" or "might" in those usages that lead us to the conditional "were" in that sort of elliptical shorthand phrase. So I just thought I'd call that in.
Okay.
And the other thing I mentioned, I wanted to put in a word in defense of "very unique." I would probably not use it myself, but couldn't the case be made that that you're trying to express the degree by which something is different from everyone else? If everyone does 99% and you do 100%, you're unique. But if they're all 50% and you're 100%, you're very unique.
I could see that.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, I wouldn't use it myself, but if something is much more different than, that makes sense. You could make a logical argument for that.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well,
still, it's one of those things that still it bothers a lot of people when they say "very unique." So I wouldn't do it. But it reminds me of a funny example. I was writing an article about "very unique," and I was trying to give other examples. And you'd say this in the same way. You can say someone was completely dead or very dead. Like "dead" is another one of those words that is supposed to not be able to be
right.
Graded. And then someone goes, "well, what about zombies?" <You
know? laughs> Yeah.
So I'm like, I give up.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. I'm going to try to get to several here now. Lisa in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wanting to call and find out about using the words "bust," "burst," and "broken," and how that works. Because I hear and even read in the newspapers sometimes where someone will say, "well, the window was busted." I think it's broken, but maybe you could shed some light on that.
Hmm. Well, I think that "bust" is probably an informal way of saying "broken." Maybe in the same way that, you know, we might say "we knocked him off" instead of "we murdered him." I think "the window was busted." That sounds like, it sounds to me like my gut reaction is like street gang talk, you know, like,
yeah,
"that window was busted, dude."
Yeah.
You know?
It just seems really informal, and it's starting to show up in places like I said, in newspaper articles and things. So.
Hmm. Well, when you're broke, you're busted.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a new usage. I think it goes back pretty far, but it still has that informal feel to it.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, Lisa, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jane in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jane.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. My question has to do with the difference between composed and comprised. When you're saying "the board of directors was composed of," you often see "comprised," but I'm not sure that's correct.
Good question.
Right. So a lot of people mix up those words. The whole comprises the parts. So a deck of cards comprises 52 individual cards. Usually what you want is "composed of." So typically, like the way you hear it said more often is a deck is composed of 52 cards. So "composed of" is usually what you want when you're writing that kind of sentence. And it is a tricky one. A lot of people get confused about comprised and composed. I feel bad. I know that there's a memory trick for it on my site. If you go to Google Grammar Girl comprised compose, it'll take you to an article that has a memory trick, but I can't remember what the memory trick is right now. So, maybe it's not that good, but you can find it and maybe it will help you.
Okay. All right. Let's try to squeeze one more in, and that's going to be Kelly in Columbus. You're on the air. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Hi.
Well, I'm calling to see if Grammar Girl has any recommendations for how some of us who are probably fantastically genetically compromised in spelling. Is there any great spelling programs out there? And we've done a lot of them.
Oh, I am not aware of any spelling programs. It's just, you know, with spelling, it really is just practice. And so, yeah, I would keep looking for apps or games or something like that that just lets you practice your spelling because, I mean, you just have to memorize it. There are some rules, but, you know, English is so tricky. You know, I've heard that the, you know, I before E except after C and some other things, like some educators have said that that rule is so worthless we should just throw it out because there are so many exceptions. So, you know, there are some rules, and it really helps. Like one thing I found when I was writing my 101 words to sound smart and 101 words, you know, for the high school graduate should know, it is when you look up the origin of a word, sometimes you can link it to something that makes sense and helps you remember. Hmm. So sometimes, you know, digging deep into where that word comes from can help, but really it's just practice.
Mignon Fogarty, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mignon Fogarty, blogger, podcaster, author, and now app developer. I want to welcome back to our control room, Amy Jurevich. It's nice to hear you on the radio again, Amy. And thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News and streaming on WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus.